And tonight, William Henry joins us, investigative mythologist, as we talk about angels and aliens and shapeshifters in the Anunnaki. Get ready for all of that with William Henry in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. William Henry, investigative mythologist, author of numerous books and DVD presentations, including Stargate 2012, Revelation 2012. He applies the latest theories in science and consciousness to ancient myths, and well, he uncovers the secrets that are guarded by such groups as the Illuminati. Here he is on Coast to Coast, back again, Coast to Coast favorite. William, how are you?
Wonderful, George. So nice to talk with you.
Have you been traveling all over the planet again?
I have. I was at a wonderful event with David Wilcock in Tempe, Arizona, just before Thanksgiving, and was in Philly this past weekend, actually.
Super. You and David Wilcock together in one room. Oh, my God. What a brain, huh?
Oh, it was an incredible time. He, you know, David has picked up on this Tibetan rainbow body of light research that I've been doing and applied some amazing new DNA science to it to really put together just an astonishing presentation. I hope to get together with him again soon.
Yeah, he's a super guy. Still thinks that President Obama is going to disclose aliens and have them flanked by him, but that's what he says. He said his sources tell him that, so I'm waiting for the moment.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you, just kind of sitting here going, let's see it. Let's just get it done. Let's do it. Make it happen. Shoot it with a smile, President Obama. Let's just make it happen. Tell us what's really going on.
Absolutely. Have you been in D.C. lately?
I was in D.C. the most recent time in August, and I just wanted to share a fun story. I had been trying for a long while to get into the off limits to the public congressional reading room. This is where the members of the Congress and Senate go to read. It's in the Library of Congress in the Jefferson Building, and I kept getting all these no answers. And then one day I called and the door opened. And so I visited there back in August. I go in to meet the librarian in charge, and she says, I know who you are. And then she says, is George Nuri as kind in person as he sounds on the radio? So thank you, George, for opening the door to this incredible room where it has some of the most astonishing ascension artwork. It complements what you find in the dome of the U.S. Capitol, and I'd just been really dying to get in there just to study it personally. And so I'm very thankful to that librarian for giving me that opportunity to spend a couple hours in there studying that artwork.
I remember you told us when you were in the Capitol building how you got down on your back and looked straight up at the artwork and everything else, and you were just in awe. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, you know, I've since learned, George, I mean, people have gone into the Capitol and tried to do the same thing, and they tell them that you can't do that because that's considered a form of protest.
Really?
Exactly. And I was recently, I got married back in October. My wife is British, and I had to fly up to Chicago to go to the Homeland Security office in Chicago. And I was actually sitting on the floor talking on the phone, and I was told by a brush-cut security guy, sir, you're going to have to stand up. You're not allowed to sit in a federal building. It's a form of protest. And so I've kind of encouraged people to say, well, if you're going to follow my lead and go into the dome of the Capitol to engage yourself and enjoy this incredible painting of George Washington on the rainbow in his ascension phase, might be better off just to stand up, because otherwise you could be liable to be arrested or thrown out of the building.
Absolutely. And you got married. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much, George. Yeah, I met my wife, Claire. She's from England. She was on my Egypt tour, and it was love at first sight. I know for me and Claire, took her a day or two maybe, but after a while, by the end of the tour, everyone's saying, what's going on here? And she came to visit this summer, and I couldn't let her go, and so we got married October 24th on the beach in Destin, Florida.
Well, good for you. Boy, my sources are slipping. Nobody told me this.
I have a photo of her on my blog.
Okay.
On my website, williamhenry.net, and go to my blog. It says it's time, and there's a picture of Claire and I.
Oh, let me tell Lex, who's out there doing his thing, our webmaster, steal the picture, Lex, and put it on our website under our Digicam. Get it up there tonight. When it's there, tell me so everybody can go and look at that.
Yeah, it's my beautiful bride, Claire. I've waited 48 years
for her.
Thank you.
And you're still doing a lot of work with Whitley, right, on Dreamland?
Absolutely. Yeah, I host the show Revelations every Wednesday. Got a 30-minute show, and just try to keep up to date that way. There's so much going on right now that it's almost, as you know, you just about can't keep up.
No, I know. And what's going on with a new website of yours?
Well, it was time to launch a new website. My earlier iteration was a few years old, and I wanted to come up with a little bit of a new look and a new focus. And in the past, I've focused mostly on the idea of ancient stargates and wormholes. I'm still deeply interested in that. But now the new site kind of marks a shift in my focus. I was tremendously inspired. I was actually, not to be a name dropper here, but I was having dinner with Robert Downey Jr. this past summer as a friend, and he was talking about what I've been doing. And he said, you know, what you're really doing is showing us the next level of humanity. And I said, well, you know, it's funny because I've been inspired by Albert Einstein's quote, who said that we can't solve the problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. In order to solve our current problems, the next human will have to emerge. And I'm thinking, well, so who's the next human? Is it us? Are we the ones the Hopi say we've been waiting for? Or is there another version of humankind that's out there right now getting ready to come online? And if so, who is that being? How will we know that being when they arrive?
Is this a new evolution from WilliamHenry.net?
It is. I'm going to be focusing more on how we reveal the next human within ourselves, because that's what I believe this is all about. We tend to wear our souls on the inside, whereas I think the next human is going to wear the soul on the outside. We're going to be more spiritually based, and this is kind of the crossroads that we're at right now. There's this huge transhumanism movement right now where you have all the computer companies that are racing to create computer technology that will actually wear for a time. But we know that what they really want is to make the human body the next platform for computer development. All this high technology and genetics, nanotechnology, neuroscience, and medicine is actually geared towards implanting this technology in our skin so that we effectively become iPods. And that's one version of the next human. The other version is more of a spiritually based, in tune more with the Milky Way galaxy, and expanding our consciousness as light beings. And that's kind of the direction I'm focusing on.
Tell me about the stargates and some of the work you've been doing, and then we'll of course get into angels, aliens, the Anunnaki, and also these shapeshifters as well. What's going on in the world of stargates these days?
Well, I've been looking at this idea ever since I read Zachariah Sitchin's books back in the early 90s. I kept noticing that while he was talking about the Anunnaki, the gods flying around in rocket ships, that almost every time he would show a depiction of the gods entering the earth plane, they seemed to be coming and going through gateways. And I started collecting images of the cylinder seals that tell these ancient stories of these gods emerging or coming and going from the earth plane. And sure enough, they're stepping through gateways, they're stepping through portals. And what I also noticed is that accompanying these images of portals and gateways were stories of human transformation, that you didn't just simply up and walk through one of these stargates like you see in the movies Contact and Stargate. Rather, the ancients focused on the transformation of humans into divine beings or gods preparatory to going through that gate. And I believe that we're on the verge of duplicating these ascension chambers, if you will, that we see depicted in these ancient representations, and that this is going to be opening the door towards traveling in parallel dimensions, teleportation. It will change everything overnight and will probably happen within the next 10 years.
The work of Albert Einstein, and you believe he got it correct when it comes to change, and he said we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used to when we created them. What did he mean by that?
Well, what he said is we have to think out of the box, think outside the box, first of all. We have to be open to new possibilities. And this is the crossroads that we're at right now. We can either keep doing the same thing over and over again, and as they say, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, that's the definition of insanity. And right now, we're on the verge of entering into insanity and total chaos, if we don't get outside of ourselves, reach to our higher selves, our perfect selves, if you will, that inner perfect being, and connect with higher intelligences that can help us to solve our current problems. This isn't to say that we're waiting for some kind of a savior figure to manifest out of thin air. We're not waiting for the guys in the flying saucers to come down and solve things for us. We can do it ourselves, but it's just that we have to evolve mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally into the next level of human in order to transcend our current situation.
I was talking earlier about the genetic alteration of human beings, almost turning people into fighting machines, cyborgs. Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening, William, with the next human, or do you see more of an evolution, a spiritual evolution, where the next evolution of a human being will be something grander than what we are today?
Well, I mean, this is something, again, I've been looking at since my book, Cloak of the Illuminati, when I became very interested in that super soldier suit that MIT is developing for the U.S. military, where they're creating literally a new skin, an exoskeleton for the military, which is a good thing, because the skin in its proposed design would be resistant to ballistic attack. In other words, bullets would ping off of them. They'd be resistant to chemical attack. They would have... their musculature would be enhanced through nanotechnology. And you look at this and you think, wow, I'm really in favor for protecting our soldiers. But then what you recognize is that as this stuff begins to filter its way into the police forces, as it begins to hit the streets, now all of a sudden you've got a group of beings out there that are essentially unstoppable. But behind it is this idea that we're uniting man and machine. And that's something that I'm personally kind of uncomfortable with. I try to stay neutral on it because I recognize that when you're talking about genes, bits, which is computer technology, neurons, neuroscience, and atoms or nanotechnology, you're really just talking about the same old elements of earth, air, fire, and water retooled. And of course, our bodies are composed of those four elements. But what is always left out of the conversation when the technologists get together and talk about redesigning the human body is they leave out the fifth element, which is spirit, the quintessence, the life force energy. And I just don't see technology incorporating spirit to the degree that it's something that I would be prepared to want to, for example, begin to start implanting computers in my body. That's the line that I draw. And I recognize that I'm probably a dinosaur as far as these guys are concerned. They're really looking at the generation or generations that are coming up that are, say, 10 years old right now, maybe as old as 20 years old. This is all aimed at this younger generation, and they will gladly accept it. They seem to come into the world cable ready or computer ready, and they embrace this. And it could be just a matter of one generation that suddenly we see this huge transformation of ordinary children into these cyborgs or computer enhanced beings.
Absolutely. You know, as we get close to Christmas, it's only appropriate now to start talking with you about angels. What, in your opinion, William, are angels?
Well, there's several levels of angels. You have your kind of not your Hallmark card angels, but that's a good place to start. That's where what most people think of when they think of an angel. And that angel is simply a messenger, the lowest level. But there's actually a hierarchy of angels. You have your archangels. And then at the highest level, you have a group of beings that I've been spending a lot of time studying lately, and that is the seraphim. They're the highest order of angels. They're considered to be beings of pure light and pure love who dwell at the throne of God. But the catch is, in many traditions, these seraphim are considered to be transformed humans. They are the next level of humanity.
Are they benevolent, or do they have a streak of evil in them?
Well, most angels, of course, are benevolent, but there are some that have been known to cause trouble. Lucifer is considered a primary example of a quote-unquote fallen angel. And so you look at this and go, well, how can an angel be bad? Well, the fact is that some, in fact, are. But at the highest level, when we're talking about the seraphim, they are entirely benevolent. Again, beings of pure light and pure love who have the highest interest of humankind in their being.
And what do you mean by the light body effect?
Well, here's this ultimate ancient secret that all of us in the human body are in sort of a pupil form. If you think of us sort of like the caterpillar, there is a light being within us that is akin to the butterfly. And what all of the ancient traditions describe, and every spiritual or sacred tradition around the world has a name for this next level of evolution, this metamorphosed or morphed human that has achieved the light body. It's called the body of bliss. It's called the golden body, the light body, the resurrection body. Every tradition has a name for it. Some say it's composed of a supramental substance. Others describe it as a pure light energy. But what we're talking about when we talk about the light body is something that is within all of us that we essentially wear on the inside, but which through transformation of our mind, body, and spirit, we can begin to wear on the outside. And when we wear it on the outside, it's portrayed in sacred art as either a rainbow body, being rainbow-colored light, or an energy field, usually egg-shaped, that is filled with bright white light.
Would the rainbow portion of this light body, would that be considered your aura, or is that something else?
The aura might be a manifestation of it, but usually when they, especially in the Tibetan tradition, when they describe the rainbow body, what they say happens, George, is that the human body, the vibration of the human body through the acceleration of the soul's vibration can be spun into a vortex of pure energy that manifests as five-colored rainbow light. So it goes beyond the aura to where the lamas can actually transform themselves into these beings of rainbow-colored light. And then in Tibetan artwork, they're portrayed within rainbow rings. And these rings are actually vibration. The ring is a vibration. It's also concentric rings, or portrayed as concentric rings, which indicate a vortex. And so I believe that what's happening here is that as they achieve this rainbow body, they spin themselves into this ring or vibration that actually can open up a vortex or a portal through which these beings then can travel the cosmos.
Are there people who can see these light bodies?
I have a friend who recently gave me a photograph of the light body.
Really?
She told me that in Tibet, of course, not much of this is going on in Tibet right now, but when in India and elsewhere, when the rainbow body is manifested, if only one person sees a lama, one of the Tibetan masters, transform into the rainbow body, if only one person sees this happen, they're not allowed to talk about it. But if a group sees it, then it's considered a legitimate manifestation. And in this instance, they actually took a photograph of a being transforming into the rainbow body. This photo was tested by Kodak and legitimized. And in this photo, what we see is this almost spinning vortex of rainbow-colored energy, just like you see in the Tibetan images of the rainbow body.
That is amazing. And do these rainbows, are they the same color for everybody, or do they change?
They're five-colored, and they're very consistent in the artwork. And what I've gone about doing is showing that, and you can see this on my website under my new presentation, Soul Rising, where I compare the Tibetan images of beings who have achieved the rainbow body, they're in the rainbow ring, with the resurrection images of Jesus, who is also shown in his rainbow ring or sitting on a rainbow. The rainbow in this case indicates not only the fully transformed human, but it also represents a method of travel. It's a bridge, a rainbow bridge linking earth with the heavenly realms.
And in your latest work, Soul Rising, you have looked at this transfiguration of the human being to the point where, are we in a period now, William, where more people are at this point where they understand how to build their own soul, how to make it work?
We're absolutely in that period, and part of what's sparking this is the internet. People have instant access to these sacred texts and to this imagery that they've never had at any point in history before, and this is what is going to change everything.
Let's talk more about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know, I find it fascinating too, in ancient pictures always depicting Jesus and very spiritual beings, they're always shrouded in light, aren't they? Always.
Yes.
Is that
they
what
are.
You're talking about, this rainbow of body of light?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, especially in the case of Jesus, when we see the images of the resurrected Jesus, when he's come out of the tomb, he's either completely engulfed in light, white light, or most often, and I think the most technically accurate ones, are when he's surrounded by a rainbow energy, or ultimately sitting on a rainbow. This is called the glory body, or the glorified body. And we pick up the pun here and think glory, glow, ray. They are literally glowing rays. They are glow-ray-fied beings. They have achieved the next level, and as a consequence, they literally glow rays. They're called the illuminated ones, the Illuminati. These are some of the terms, and in fact, the Apostle Paul says that we are all in the process of morphing into these glory bodies, or illuminated bodies, or light bodies.
Did somebody teach them these techniques, or did they always have this glow?
Well, this is one of the great and most fascinating questions and mysteries concerning the rainbow body. I mean, if you go back to the Tibetans, who seem to be the real authority on this, while in Christianity you see the images and you're offered the story of a man, Jesus, who turned into or resurrected himself into the rainbow body. In Tibet, they have a whole virtual kind of corpus of information and knowledge and techniques about how to do this. And the Tibetans are crystal clear about this, that this technology, this spiritual technology we're describing, did not come from Earth. It's an extraterrestrial teaching that is in fact taught in 13 star systems in addition to our own. Now, the Tibetans don't name those 13 star systems, but I've gone out, and as I'm talking with audiences, people readily can develop a list of star systems based on their own research that we believe encompass these, or are members of this colony of or federation of star systems, and that would include Sirius, Cygnus, Orion, Arcturus, Ursa Major, Lyra, the Pleiades, and Draco. So that's eight right there. And the Tibetans are teaching us that we are a member of a federation of an additional five, for a total of actually 14 star systems, 13 beside our own, 14 including our own.
It's fascinating that most of those star systems you just mentioned have always been pinpointed as possible sources of ET visitations.
You got it. And that's what makes this so fascinating, because the Tibetans teach that we can turn ourselves into beings of light. I mean, the question is that has always been at the apex of any kind of first contact kind of scenario, especially as pointed out by Dr. Carl Sagan in his work Contact, is that the distances are so far. That how are these beings coming and going these vast distances? Are they coming in metallic spaceships? Did they have another mode of travel? And of course, it was Sagan and Kip Thorne who invented, based on Einstein's work, the idea of the traversable wormhole is one way in which these vast distances could be traversed. Well, my work with the rainbow body actually came about when I was at a UFO conference a few years ago, and a wonderful couple came up to me, and they told me that they knew the Dalai Lama. They both had PhDs from the Harvard Divinity School. They translated Tibetan texts. They lived in India. They were experts on the rainbow body. And one thing that the Tibetans never would answer to them, that my work answered for them, was that once these lamas achieve this next level, once they achieve the rainbow body and can travel to these other 13 star systems, how do they get there? And what they said after watching my presentations about the ancient Egyptians and their understanding of stargates and wormholes is that they travel through wormholes that, according to Sagan and others, naturally permeate the universe. And what they have learned is how to transform the body, the earthly body, into a heavenly body and traverse the stars.
That is something. And this travel, instantaneous?
Yes, instantaneous. Not only can they travel interdimensionally and through these wormholes, but then they can also manifest in our world. Look at the story of Jesus. Over a dozen times after he achieved the next level, this resurrection body, this rainbow body or glory body, he could then manifest in this world, even taking on physical form. And this is something that you find in these stories of these beings who have achieved the next levels, that their ability to they have the ability to flip-flop, if you will, or toggle in between the material realm and the immaterial realm, the light realm.
You cite a story of Chief Seattle, who lived back in the late 1700s to 1800s. Tell me about that.
Well, this is one of the kind of the guiding stories of the ecology movement, in that back in the 1780s, Chief Seattle is believed to have said that when the earth is sick, the animals will begin to disappear. When that happens, the warriors of the rainbow will come to save them. And the Hopi have picked up on this as well, and they talk about the rainbow warriors. This is part of Native American tradition. And what I wonder is, are we talking about a legion of angels, the rainbow warriors, of these ascended beings, of these transformed humans who have achieved the rainbow body, who will be manifesting in our world at this time in order to guide us and lead us into a better future?
Well, that's very possible. That we're being watched and guided right now, isn't it, William?
I have no doubt about that. In fact, I hear people telling me ever since I've started talking about the seraphim, and people have been coming to my presentations, they've been describing what they think of as manifestations of these beings. Because once you start to key into this idea that there is a group of beings that have transformed themselves into light spheres or to this rainbow body, then the next step is that they're still interacting with us, and that they may account for some of these apparitions that people see. For example, the Mother Mary, when she appeared in Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared as a rainbow being. Our Lady of Fatima, she appeared as a rainbow being. Why are they always shown with the rainbow around them? And what I propose is because they have achieved the rainbow body. And then when they manifest in our world, people are perceiving them as having rainbows around them.
Are they extraterrestrial, or are they merely just from other dimensions, for example?
Well, by definition, yeah, they would be. Some are extraterrestrial. Some are Earth humans who have made this transformation. One of the terms the Buddhists use is the term bodhisattva. These are beings who have achieved this next level, maybe have achieved the rainbow body, but have agreed to stay and assist others until all who choose to go before them have left.
In Soul Rising, your latest work, you talk about Enoch, Elijah, again, also others that have achieved this ascension into the rainbow of light. Mm-hmm. How are they taught this, William, in your opinion?
Well, in the case of Enoch, who's the classic example, he is an Old Testament elder. He is believed to have lived before the flood in a civilization that was destroyed. Think Atlantis. He's a researcher. He's presented as a researcher. He's a master of esoteric lore, an elder, a sage, a wise man. And he gets a call from the Archangel Michael, is the one who assisted him in his first ascension into the heavenly realms. Enoch is taken up to heaven in this famous statement that you find in the Bible, that Enoch walked with God and he was no more. Enoch is taken up into the heavenly realms, specifically to the throne of God, is given direct and very specific instruction by the angels. The Archangel Michael actually pours an oil over him and transforms his body into glorious flame, so that all that is left of him, his hair, his bones, his skin, all dissolve, and what is left is the glorious body, the rainbow body. And Enoch remarks that he is identical now to the dwellers of the heavenly throne. He stays there for a time, is given this instruction, then is sent back to Earth for a period of time in which he is allowed to share this knowledge that he's accumulated. Then he's taken back up into the heavenly realms once more. He's given a new name, Metatron, which means beyond the throne, or perhaps beyond human, and is given a new job. He now is the guide of humankind, and he operates in this kind of interdimensional realm so that any human who's doing this kind of esoteric research like Enoch was doing would come on the radar of these beings. Then they would be able to interact and communicate with humans who are on this path and assist them in their transformation.
How much of this ascension is spiritual or just human, but they just knew things?
Well, I tend to try to look at it from a secular and a spiritual point of view. I mean, one of the words we've been using, the glory body, the glorified body, I mean, that's considered to be a purely spiritual term, but and specifically a Christian term. But when you look at it from the perspective of science, you're talking about what is enfolded within our DNA. And part of what I'm about right now is linking with researchers. I mean, Dr. Bruce Lipton is a good example of someone who's talking about the what is in our DNA that could spontaneously metamorphose into the next level of human. He is documenting that this is actually possible. David Wilcock was sharing research about how this is literally actually possible, that we can spontaneously transform or transfigure into light beings. The Bible says it will happen at the last trump, which means a tone, wave, or reverberation. And so this plays into this whole idea that David has been developing, that we're moving into an area of the Milky Way where the energy is higher, and it may be that this higher zone of frequency is feeding our light body and might be assisting in this transformation. So this is all science that we're talking about now, but we're using spiritual terms to describe this transformation.
It's fascinating, though, that, again, looking at the past, they all had this ability to shroud themselves in this light, all of them.
And I really appreciate your use of the word shroud there, George, because the shroud is considered a term used for, for example, the Shroud of Turin, which is believed to be a relic of Jesus's resurrection. The shroud is another term for that is the robe. And they call this light body the robe of glory, the mantle of glory. These are terms that they use for it, and they're literally talking about a covering, a sheath that emerges from within our body that then manifests as light. And I always like to share this joke. I mean, it's not really a joke. It's just the observation about the two caterpillars looking up at the butterfly saying, "You'll never get me up in one of those things." And that's kind of where we're at as we look at some of these images. You'll say, well, wait a minute, you'll never get me to pop into my rainbow body. You'll never see me light up like a light bulb. But this is exactly what we're talking about. And this is the fundamental predicament that we're all in right now. We all have within our neuro system, our chakra system that lines our spinal cord system. It's like we all have this candle within us. The wick of the candle is our pineal gland, our enlightenment gland. But the problem is none of our candles are lit. None of our elevators go to the top. And this is what I'm talking about with the next level of human. The next human will have our elevators will go to the top. And it's up to us to break on through this barrier that says that we can't do this when everything about the ancient past, every single spiritual tradition says we can.
And indeed we can. Let's go back and talk for a few minutes about these 13 star systems that are out there. Highly populated, in your opinion?
I would say so. I mean, just based on how important they are in myth and sacred tradition. Cygnus, the Egyptians said that was their location of heaven. And they talked about their beings, especially their creator gods, Ptah, coming from Sirius. So it suggests to me that what we're describing here is Earth being brought online with these other, or Earth and Sol, the name of our star system, being brought online with this federation of star systems and this greater life that's out there. I call this the New World Order, because while many talk about the New World Order as being some kind of a prison planet scenario, what I'm saying is that if we break through this and actually look at what the ancients were trying to get us to connect with, that's the New World Order is us connecting our consciousness with these vastly advanced beings and beginning to picture ourselves as a member of a of a federation, if you will, of these star systems with beings coming and going. And the next step is just to simply say, well, okay, if these beings have always been here, then why can't we communicate with them now? And will this be a part of the disclosure that we're anticipating coming from Obama or perhaps some other organization? My answer is I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think that we're going to start to see the Dalai Lama play a key role in this, going to be revealing some of this Tibetan knowledge about disclosure and the existence of these beings and how they have always been here, why they're here, and how they can help.
If Jordan Maxwell were with us tonight, William, he'd be talking about the Illuminati, the Illuminate, and you know the way he is with words and phrases. Do you think that, as you mentioned, Illuminati, do they possess something very mystical?
I have no question about that, that they absolutely do possess these mystical secrets. I think you have, like with everything, you have factions. You have a left wing of the Illuminati and a right wing of the Illuminati. The one I study is the up wing, the group that possesses these advanced mystical teachings, the secrets of ascension. I follow the ones that want to elevate us beyond the level of human. And this goes all the way back to the ancient Anunnaki who established this quote-unquote game, if you will, on Earth, where you had this rivalry between two brothers. On the one hand, you had the creator god Enki that sought to implant within our DNA the mystical knowledge and the ability to transform ourselves into the gods, to match the Anunnaki, even to exceed them. Then you had his brother Enlil in the stories who wanted to keep us on the level of slaves and sex objects and down on the farm. And this has been the battle that has been going on throughout history, and we even see it being played out today.
I think so, too. And the science behind this is remarkable. How many people are investigating things like that? Yourself included, of course. But is it a big field? Is it a wide field? If people want to get involved in this, what do they do?
When you're talking about the rainbow body?
That and just about everything else that has to do with investigative mythology.
You know, in my experience, and I'm truly a blessed person, I believe, George, because I have in my audiences, and I'm sure other researchers will share this sentiment, an extraordinary brain trust of people out there who are studying this. Typically, I think of the greatest untapped resource on the planet if I were to describe that, would be they're female. She's a woman. She's in her mid-50s, early 60s, maybe on the edge of retirement, if not retired, has disposable income. This is her life. There is a vast number of people out there that are dedicating themselves to their spiritual evolution. And it's they who are building this thought form for the next level of human. And when I talk with especially these elderly, I mean that in the sense that there are elders, these are the sagely women in particular, and also the men too, they recognize that their kids who are in their kind of their 20s, 30s, and maybe early 40s are not as much interested in this, but it's their grandchildren who are coming along and who absolutely resonate with these ideas and are embracing them. And so I see that these elders, these sagely women and men who are doing this work right now are doing it for themselves, but ultimately it's this younger generation that's coming up that's going to benefit most greatly from it.
All right, up next with William Henry, we're going to talk about the reptilians and the Anunnaki. Get ready for that. My, oh, my, oh, my. His website, by the way, williamhenry.net. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.